This is World Roots on the BBC with me, Lucy Duran. On this programme, American musician and writer Banning Air takes us on an Appalachian road trip.
You can see the Appalachian Mountains rising up on either side, very lush and green. It's strange to think that this same range stretches all the way down the eastern coast of the United States. These mountains and the Piedmont areas around them are really central to the story of the uniquely American folk music, a music that's been forged through years of settlement, slavery, and of course, emancipation. First stop on our Appalachian road trip is Surry County in North Carolina. This county lays claim to a strong old-time music tradition. For the last 38 years, it's hosted the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention.
We're the Road Apple Ramblers from Brevard, North Carolina.
We're the New Southern Ramblers from Asheville, North Carolina.
We're the Iron Mountain Ridge Runners.
We're the Round Peak Ramblers. We're from Mount Airy, North Carolina.
We're called the Blind Tiger String Band.
And we're the Sugarloaf Mountain Band.
We're the Prairie Acre from Lawrence, Kansas.
The Hard Cider String Band.
You know what tune we're playing on stage?
Ain't a Bit Drunk.
Ain't a Bit Drunk.
Ain't a Bit Drunk, drunk, drunk.
I mean, it's what I say.
We're going to play Walk Along John to Kansas.
We're going to play a couple of tunes, probably Chinese Breakdown and Logan County Blues.
We're going to play Shortening Bread. Don't eat too much of it, it'll stunt your growth.
We're going to play Julianne Johnson. I've Got a Mountain Dulcimer. It's a Virginia-style mountain dulcimer.
Everybody ready for some old-time band music? Family from Nashville, Tennessee. Next up will be band number 18, the Reed Island Rounders from Hillsville, Virginia.
I'm here with Mike Seeger, a man who has been at the forefront of the revival movement of Appalachian old-time music. Mike now plays banjo, fiddle, and guitar. He learned this music from his parents, from field recordings, from direct encounters with people who were guardians of the tradition, from 78 RPM Records, and he's gone on to become a major documentarian and field recordist himself. In 1958, Mike was one of the founders of the new Lost City Ramblers, a group that's been at the forefront of the old-time music revival. For starters, when we talk about old-time music of Southern Appalachia, the music of this region here, we're in Mount Airy, we're kind of in the middle of this area. What do we know about the ingredients that went into this form of music that we now think of as unique American music?
A certain amount of what you think tradition was in the mid-19th century would, in rural areas of the Southeast at least, be overwhelmingly vocal music, consisting of everything from hollering to the great ballads and love songs that they talk about, fiddle music. It carried the great old tunes. Now that's from European American tradition. I like to use the term European for everybody from Northern Europe, including England, Scotland, Ireland. And from Africa, vocal music in the same way, practically, but we have no idea of what the repertoire was there really. And you had black people playing the banjo, a few white people playing the banjo, black people playing the fiddle. You probably had in the country some quills and a little bit of drumming, but I don't really know for sure, but that was the basic mix. I think that really it's the mixture of African and European cultures which have made American music American.
The other really iconic instrument of this music is the banjo, and we all think of the banjo as an iconic American instrument, but what's the real history of the banjo as you know it?
I've learned most of what I know about the history of the banjo over the past 15 or 20 years, really. Coming over from Africa as a gourd instrument with a skin stretched across the top of it and whatever you could find for strings. And then being developed probably in the early 19th century as a drum-type instrument with a neck on it, and then becoming a popular instrument because people wanted to teach it, people wanted to manufacture it. The entrepreneurial end of things definitely changed the banjo in the late 19th century. It's commonly thought that today's clawhammer banjo playing has its roots in African playing. In fact, people even into the mid-20th century called that the African style, if they were being polite. And it's knocking down on the strings rather than picking up as you pick up on a guitar, for instance, to strike a note.
We're in the heyday of old-time Southern Appalachian music, and people are gathering and having social events and work parties, and music is part of this, and folk music and life are part and parcel of local lifestyle. What happens to start to really change that, and when does it happen?
To me, you're trying to imagine a time before there was radio and recordings. And during that time, you got all your information by somebody that you could see face to face. And all of a sudden, there's this possibility of hearing somebody you've never seen before and who've been elevated to the place of this new gadget that can reproduce that voice from somebody somewhere else. And it gives you a different idea towards the music that you make. The recording companies would come into a place where there was a circle of musicians around, and they'd advertise in the papers, wanted old-time musicians, or they'd do it by word of mouth sometimes, and then record people who came in and then sell that same music back to the people who of the surrounding community, and then actually all over the United States, to such an extent that people at home would rather turn a radio on than try to play the banjo themselves because they thought that music was better. And it probably was in some cases more in tune and so forth because these were played by professional musicians. So the effect was for the new commercial musics to kill homemade music. And that reached its bottom point sometime in the 50s. Then there was a revival in the urban areas, as there had been from time to time. And then our group started, and a few of us in the urban areas started documenting the music and then started playing it, going to fiddlers' conventions, or just celebrating the older forms of music. And people in the South began saying, well, you know, what was back then, maybe it is good, maybe it is interesting. And I think that we're now in a real reflowering or revitalization of the concept of making music for yourself, of amongst people in the South too, not just from the urban areas.
All right, band number 62 right there. That's Benton Flippin and the Smoky Valley Boys. Judges, this will be a write-in. They're a late registration, so they didn't get added to the list here. So this will be number 117. This is the Midriffs from Durham, North Carolina. They're going to do June Apple, number 117.
We're taking a break from the old-time action at Veterans Memorial Park in Mount Airy, and we're off to visit another institution that's played a very important role in keeping this music alive, local radio station WPAQ 740 AM. We're heading up towards Kudzu Hill, where the tower... Oh, there it is! There's the tower, and there's the kudzu, the weed that grows all over this part of the country. And the studio is a nice little brick building sitting up there on top of the hill with the call letters proudly emblazoned over the doorway. Right, let's get a look inside this place.
Riding out again on old Dan. Got a kind of little frog in my throat here. You play for me, will you? Deal, bear with me.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Welcome to WPAQ.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Come on in. Make yourself at home.
Oh, lovely. Look around. Look at this.
Wow. It's 129. We'll be back with the weather forecast and the obituaries in their condensed form after these words. It's the 38th annual Bluegrass...
This studio looks like it's hardly changed since the studio was started in 1948. I'm here with Kelly Epperson, son of the founder of WPAQ, and tell us a little bit about your dad, Ralph Epperson, and what his vision was when he started the studio back then.
The real purpose behind him getting into radio was he felt like there wasn't enough of the old-time music native to his part of the woods, and he felt like one day he was going to make this more available to people.
Okay, Tiny and Flossie, and they used to have a program here on the station, and this was recorded at the time.
This world can't stand long, be ready, don't wait too late.
We had an audience here, not just a radio audience, but they would come up and the old lady would come up and see what the old man was doing. And he was in here sawing on a fiddle, usually. In the corner of the room, there's an old Baldwin piano. That reminds me of the gospel quartet singing.
Down here.
The Friendly Four Quartet, Golden Gate Jubilee, the Silvertone Harmonizers, that was a black group. He was very fond of that type of gospel music. And it was good, clean music. Everybody took a turn in the family being an announcer here. My dad was the only one who had any education, so he was constantly letting him know it's not Bologna, it's Bologna, or Bologna, and it's not ambulance, it's ambulance.
By the way, it'd be a good time, if you haven't already done so, to call up some friends and neighbors and tell them that this program goes all the way around.
Right, so he was on duty all the time.
Oh, he did not miss a thing. In fact, if there was an old-time tune, that, you know, back in the 20s and 30s, unfortunately, there were some words used to describe people that were just not, you know, and just not correct and what we would accept today. So when my dad would hear one of those being played, he immediately had the announcer take a label or some tape and cover up that particular cut on the album so it could not be played again.
Religious programs.
Oh, yes, religious programs. My dad wanted to be sure that the family could enjoy his radio station, that you wouldn't hear a bad word, or at least tried to. A good part of the day was set aside for preaching and teaching of the Bible.
But I wonder what he did with the verse of Scripture that says, the soul that sinneth it shall die. There is a point unto man.
And you have some fiery preachers, too. There was a preacher called Hackshaw Johnson, and he was talking about the modest apparel back in the 50s, and some of the people were out here wearing, you know, in his way, in his term, you know, almost naked, you know, the clothing. And he was preaching and preaching and just preaching up a storm, and he got hot, his face was all sweaty, and he had suspenders on, and all of a sudden they broke, and his britches fell down. And it was a great moment. He said, well, I've preached and I've preached and I've preached till my suspenders broke and my britches fell down. But come to think of it, I've still got more clothes on than the rest of you jaybirds out there.
That's
an old man told my dad one time, said, you know, Ralph, said, I was just telling the old lady, said, you got about the best music I ever heard. Some of the best. And some of the sorriest. That tells it like it is.
Wrapping up today's edition of Traditional Gospel Music. Tune in again tomorrow at 11 o'clock here on WPAQ.
It's after midnight now, and the competition on the main stage is winding down. The field is clearing out. But out in the campsites, and especially up here on the hill, the music is going on, and all of it is live. There's no recorded music anywhere. You have kids sitting in the back of a pickup, drinking moonshine, local moonshine, out of glass jars, and playing banjos and guitars and fiddles and singing, and there's no sign that it's going to let up anytime soon. Anybody who wants to sleep here is going to be having a nice, rich soundtrack to sleep to, and I suspect that'll go on right until it starts getting light in the morning. And of course, at 9:30 in the morning, the competition starts all over again. Non-stop music here at Mount Airy.
You're listening to World Roots on the BBC with me, Lucy Duran. There's more from Banning Air's Appalachian Road Trip after this.
BBC.
4 years into the economic crisis.
What I want the American people and our partners around the world to know is this. We are going to get through this. Things will get better.
When will the pain turn to gain?
I'm not aware of any pretty solutions. Austerity is not pretty. Restructuring is not pretty.
Award-winning journalist Martin Wolf examines how financial turmoil is changing the world.
Basically, if it goes beyond a certain point, you never know where it's going to end.
And why things may never be the same again.
How orderly or how disorderly will this be?
New global economics, the shock and the shift. Online from Tuesday at bbcworldservice.com.
Tell us what you think about what you hear on the BBC by joining me, Raj and Datar, every weekend for Over to You. Email us now at overtoyou@bbc.co.uk.
I'm Lucy Duran, and coming up on World Roots in a moment, Banning Air continues his Appalachian road trip. There are more highlights from the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention in North Carolina, including performances by the Slate Mountain Ramblers, the Cool Springs Ramblers, and the Snow Creek Old Time Band. There's also an explanation of so-called flatfoot dancing, and Banning Air tries a local gourmet delicacy, the deep-fried Oreo. But first, the news.
BBC News with Nick Kelly. Libya's transitional government has promised a fair trial for Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, the son of the country's former leader, who's been captured. The Libyan justice minister said Libya was qualified to handle the case, and assurances have been given to the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Luis Moreno Ocampo, who's due to visit Libya next week to discuss the trial. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi was arrested in the southwestern desert town of Ubari as he tried to reach neighbouring Niger. There's a tense standoff between Egyptian police and tens of thousands of protesters in the capital, Cairo. Earlier, police used rubber bullets and tear gas against the demonstrators, killing one and injuring more than 600. The protesters want the ruling military council to return power to a civilian government. The Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, says his country will not bow down to international pressure and will continue to tackle the armed gangs he blames for violence and sabotage. His comments, published in the Sunday Times newspaper, coincide with an Arab League deadline for Damascus to accept a delegation of monitors as part of a peace plan or face economic sanctions. President Assad accused the Arab League of creating a pretext for Western countries to intervene in Syria. Voters in Spain are going to the polls on Sunday after an election campaign dominated by worries about the economy and high unemployment. Opinion polls show a clear lead for the centre-right opposition, the Popular Party, signalling an end to 7 years in power for the socialists. And Pope Benedict is wrapping up a visit to Africa with a farewell mass in Benin's main city, Cotonou, later today. The BBC's Vatican correspondent says that during his trip, The Pope has touched on a number of complex problems that the Roman Catholic Church is facing in Africa, including dialogue with Muslims, the AIDS epidemic, and how to square Catholic teaching with traditional African religions. BBC News.
I'm Lucy Duran, and this is World Roots.
I'm Banning Air, and I'm on an Appalachian road trip for World Roots. Well, it's a new day here at the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention. Tonight will be the second and final round for the old-time and bluegrass bands, but today there's a full schedule of folk song and solo instrumental competitions.
I'm Elizabeth Laprell. I'm from Rural Retreat, Virginia, and I'm going to sing Hop Old Rabbit, which is from the singing of Horton Barker from Chilhowee, Virginia. Yonder comes a little man riding by, says, old man, your horse will die. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. Well, if he dies, I'll tan his skin, but if he lives, I'll ride him again. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. If he dies, it's no big loss, but if he lives, he's my old hoss. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. Oh, Mr. Rabbit, you look mighty thin. Yes, my lord, I'm splitting the wind. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. Oh, Mr. Rabbit, your ears are mighty long. Well, yes, my lord, they're put on wrong. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. Oh, Mr. Rabbit, you look mighty brave. Yes, my lord, I'm hunting a cave. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. Oh, Mr. Rabbit, you got a bad habit of getting in the garden and eating all the cabbage. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. I'll get old Jack and put him on the track and ride that rabbit to thundering back. Hop, 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 old rabbit, hop. That's it.
Judges, going back to the old-time fiddle competition. This is going to be number 84, Mark Campbell from Richmond, Virginia, number 84, and he's going to play a song called Kiss Me Sweet.
So we've stepped away from the main stage where the music is still going on, and I'm sitting with Paul Brown, who's been studying and researching the music of this county in particular, Surrey County, for a long time. And he plays various instruments. He's a broadcaster, a writer, researcher. And Paul, tell us, what is unique about Surrey County? How does it sort of stand out in the landscape of American folk music?
I think there are a number of very specific elements that you can point to. First, a community developed, especially in the Round Peak part of the county, in which the people were simply intense. They had what I would call a higher level of vitality, perhaps, than some other people, and it came through in their music and was characterized by a fiddle style that was recognizable and a banjo style that was recognizable. Now, as far as the fiddle style is concerned, it was based around a number of really accessible melodies and a type of syncopation that drives phrases forward. So when you hear a Round Peak or Surrey County fiddle tune, as often as not, you're going to hear a syncopated push at the beginning of a phrase. Now, when you put the banjo in with that, you have the European fiddle and the African-derived banjo coming together here in North Carolina. You got in Surrey County, for reasons pretty much unknown, a percussive, very accurate clawhammer style that dovetailed perfectly with the fiddle and really supported the fiddle lead. And that, to my mind, is the essence of the Round Peak style.
Obviously, this region really grabbed you.
Absolutely. When I started exploring in this area, I had been looking for people who sang some of the songs that I'd learned from my mom, who had learned them in Bedford County, Virginia, a little to the east of here, back in the 1920s, mostly from African Americans. And I found some of those songs up about 30 miles north and west of here in the Galax, Virginia area. After I started meeting people around there, I was introduced to some of the folks from Surrey County. When I met them and heard the music up close and felt what it was like to be around them with their tremendous storytelling and this expanded level of energy, I knew that I wanted to learn more about them and their music.
You mentioned that your mother learned a lot of these songs from African-American players, and we know from history that the African-American involvement in this music is absolutely crucial to understanding it. And yet, going around this festival, we aren't seeing literally any African-American players so far. What happened?
I think that's one of the great ironies of what's happened in American country music in the South, and there are a number of reasons for that. One, in the early days of radio and recording, music companies made and broadcasters made specific decisions regarding whom they wanted heard on various types of music so that they could sell records and so that they could target radio stations to a certain extent to audiences. So you will not find in the early 78s African-American string bands, but you will find white string bands. You won't find that many white blues artists or jazz artists, but you'll find a lot of African-American blues and jazz artists. The reasons? The record companies wanted string band music associated with white so-called hillbillies, and they called it hillbilly music, and they wanted African-Americans portrayed as playing jazz and blues for what they called race records. That's what the companies called them at the time. Beyond that, I think that there are simply reasons of race relations in the U.S. It's important to remember that the banjo is an African instrument. It developed and was played as much on the plantations in the South as it had been in its home territories. And it was appropriated by white people who, in the 19th century in particular, before and after the Civil War, became very much enamored of banjo music and African-American music in general, and lampooned it through medicine show and minstrelsy. So you had an instrument that black people wanted to get away from. They wanted to get away from the banjo. They wanted to get away from its associations, its demeaning associations for them. And they took more to the guitar, to some limited extent to the fiddle. That's not to say there weren't African-American string bands. There were plenty of them. But once again, they just weren't recorded.
So the combination of this sort of racially driven marketing paradigm on the part of the record companies and the lampooning in the minstrel shows and the medicine shows began a process that kind of developed a momentum of its own to the point where you have now really very few people, African-Americans, left who play these instruments, right?
There's probably a small number of African-American string band musicians alive in the South still today. We only really know of one fiddler who's playing regularly today, and that's Joe Thompson from Mebane, North Carolina, out near the Piedmont. So he carries on almost solo at this point, the African-American string band tradition. He's a great person to listen to get an insight into what some of these bands may have sounded like.
One thing that's really struck us here at this Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention, I knew that I would come here and find people who were very interested in this history or who were inheritors of it, preservationists. But I didn't expect to see so many young people, and even little kids, playing this music with such enthusiasm and such talent. It really gives you a feeling that for all that's been lost, for all that's changed, this is really a living tradition.
It's vibrant in a number of ways, and I'll have to say that a number of years ago, many of us who had been interested in this music felt that it was fading out once again. What surprised me is that there's a young generation of local people really taking to this music. That's the change that I really didn't expect to see. I just didn't think that would happen. And it's an amazing thing. Yeah, it's an amazing thing to see.
My name's Carly Dawn Higgins, and I'm gonna do a song I learned from Olabelle Reed from North Carolina, and it's a song entitled Undone in Sorrow. Over yonder in the graveyard, neath a little mound of clay, oh, there she lay, my own true lover, she's gone from me forevermore. Fairer than the sweetest flower, precious as the wildest wind, born with a love deep as the ocean, this was a girl that I did win. I left her up in the mountain to seek world riches again. Well, did I return? No earthly treasure could ease his heart so full of pain. I left her back in the mountain to seek world riches again. Oh, did I return? No earthly treasure could ease his heart so full of pain. There so high upon the mountain, beneath the little mound of clay, oh, the one that I returned to marry so cold among the flowers did lay. I'll go away and I will wonder how lay aside my earth again, and I'll not envy the man with riches undone in sorrow. I'll remain undone in sorrow. I'll remain.
Next up from Ararat, Virginia, here's number 35, the Slate Mountain Ramblers. And they're going to do Sugar Hill, number 35. Thank you.
I see the sign for deep fried Oreos.
Yes.
You do in fact have them?
Yes.
Well, how does it go? How many do you order?
You get four Oreos for $3.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Need an Oreo.
Yeah, they're coming out of a plastic tub and bathed in some sort of batter. What's
secret recipe?
Secret recipe. There we go. There they are. Before them, they're now down in there in the oil, boiling away. It's pretty good. Thanks very much. All right, here they are. Four deep fried Oreos. Now, I'm just fearful that it might be molten hot, but... Well, I've bitten into it, and in the middle, indeed, is an Oreo. It's become cake-like. I can't say that I'm surprised by the effect, but yeah, it's all right. I could definitely eat a couple of these. We should take one back to the engineer, though.
Okay, judges, going back to the adult old-time banjo. This is going to be number 56, John Herman from Asheville, North Carolina. He's going to be playing a song called Chilly Winds.
Just in front of the main stage here at Mount Airy, there's a special platform set aside only for dancers. And I'm here with Phil Jamieson, who has always come to this festival, especially for the dancing. Phil, tell us what's going on that stage. What kind of dancing are we seeing there? It's quite unique.
Well, it's filled with people of all ages, and when the bands play on the main stage in the contest, the dancers dance. Most of what you hear in the contest are dance tunes, and people would do square dances or get up and shuffle their feet in time with the music, and it has lots of different names. Say if you go to Tennessee, they might call it buck dancing. Around here they call it flat footing. And if you go to Kentucky, they might call it hoedowning. But people are basically doing the same thing. Individuals getting up and making time with their feet on the floor. I don't know if you've noticed this, in the campground, there's people have boards on the ground, and sometimes there'll be an individual dancer. So when the music's not amplified, and a person's dancing on a board, accompanying the music with their feet, you can hear it quite clearly.
It plays a percussion role in the music, even.
Well, it is. There's no drums in this kind of music, and so the feet play that role. There's different kinds of steps. Very much like the music, it's definitely a hybrid kind of a dance that draws on elements from the British step dance styles, as well as African dance and Native American dance. And, you know, if you look at the music, the fiddle is, you know, from the British Isles, the banjo's from Africa. All these different instruments came together to create this music, and people brought their dance steps with them too. Some are more percussive, say up on the toes, where you're getting more of a tippy-tap kind of a sound, and I always think of those as coming from the British tradition, say in a hard-soled shoe on a wooden floor. You mentioned the sliding steps, and a lot of the dancers, when they step, their feet slide backwards, which is something you don't see in British step dancing at all. You watch it and you won't see it. But in this dance, it's very characteristic, and if you watch African dancers, you'll see that. Mm. And when you think about it, people in Africa were not dancing in hard-soled shoes on wooden floors, but they were dancing barefoot on the dirt. And so the percussion is not a part of the style, but it's more of a sliding motion. So when slaves were brought to this country, they certainly danced, and white people observed their dancing. And when the minstrel shows came along in the 1840s, it was white people blacking up their faces and imitating the dances of the black people. So there was a lot of trading of steps, I mean, just like with the music. The music and the dances were traded back and forth, many times, but I think that sliding back motion is something that really makes flat footing or buck dance distinctly different from the styles in Britain. It's fun to watch, but it's not a design for performance. It's when a community gets together, like here at Mount Airy on the dance platform, people just get out and do that. And if you go to a local dance in the region, say on a Friday or Saturday night, there are places where some of these local bands play, and they'll just play a tune and the floor will fill with dancers. People just get out there and start shuffling their feet, everybody doing their own thing. Mm-hmm.
But we do have a competition for flat footing happening on the main stage.
That's true. At the end of the evening, after all the bands play here on Saturday night, they have a flat, they call it adult dance, but it's flat footing. Dancers get up there and you get, I think once through the tune, and then the music ends and the next dancer gets up, and it's a very brief amount of time, but it's really just in fun. It's not meant to be a serious competition, but it gives the dancers a chance to be recognized and show what they do and be appreciated.
One by one.
One by one. I'll be up there later on.
Post moonshine.
No, I'm not picking moonshine.
Maybe not you, but some of them.
That was band number 69, Snow Creek Old Time Band from Sandy Ridge, North Carolina. Next up, it will be band number 84 from Statesville, North Carolina. Here's the Cool Springs Ramblers, number 84. They're going to do Cluck Old Hen.
This month's World Roots was presented by Banning Air, and it was produced by Peter Meanwell for the BBC.